A Critique of Pure Unreason, Part 2. This is Uncle Bob Young of the Average Network. We've faced yet another week like few others in U.S. history. Ted Koppel reads War Dead on ABC's Nightline on Friday. A minor Shia cleric named Muqtada al-Sadr continues to confound the mighty U.S. armed forces. George Bush is under attack for his foolhardy support of Ariel Sharon and the Likud version of a pure Israel. Top of the mark is the abuse of detainees in Abu Ghraib prison in Baghdad. So many questions arise. Have American troops ever mistreated prisoners of war? During the Civil War, much was made of the monstrous POW camp at Andersonville, Georgia. Thousands of Union POWs starved to death there. Conditions at Andersonville were beyond squalor, a 250,000 men crammed into a space meant for 50,000. At the war's apex, the South was starving and were utterly unable to deal with this added burden. This wasn't the case at Utica, New York, where the Union packed 100,000 Confederate POWs into a structure built for 20,000, overseen by a thoroughly corrupt quartermaster corps. Prisoners routinely starved, but it was because guards sold them their rations and ruled them through violence and intimidation. The death rate was almost the same as Andersonville. One is tempted to note the cruelty and indifference in the Army's treatment of Native Americans. There is the case of Latin Americans who have been persecuted by a power with less historic right to the land than their own. So it goes. African Americans, Asian Americans, our forays into the Caribbean, the Spanish-American War, the Philippine invasion. To be perfectly frank, we escaped from the First World War quite clean. Even some of our highly dubious mass bombing campaigns, Hamburg, Dresden, Tokyo, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, did not kill on the scale of the Nazis or the Imperial Armed Forces. As a result, we emerged from the Second World War with our virginal reputation more or less defensible. But along with the other combatants, we did some fairly nasty things in Korea and have owned up to very few of them. Then comes Vietnam. It's our utter inability to deal with the real horrors of Vietnam that has left us as divided as we are 30 years later. Between 1958, when our advisors began appearing, and 1974, when our last troops withdrew from Saigon, the U.S. military and intelligence services had slaughtered between 1.5 and 3 million Vietnamese. Whatever the total, the ratio was roughly 5-to-1 civilian over military or insurgent casualties. We established the Strategic Hamlet program, essentially a license to destroy towns and villages suspected of housing Viet Cong or NVA, North Vietnamese Army. We destroyed food crops. We killed vital farm animals. We established free fire zones within which anything was considered a fair target for massive firepower. We practiced widespread chemical defoliation, often poisoning our own personnel in the process. Between 1965 and 1974, we expended as much munitions on Vietnam, North and South, Laos, and Cambodia as all combatants in 3 Second World Wars. We helped the ARVN, the Army of the Republic of Vietnam, build and run the hideous tiger cages on the coast, these vast, overcrowded POW camps reminiscent of the famous Civil War camps. Our intelligence personnel tortured and murdered with relative impunity. It must be understood that of the 3.5 million Americans who served in Vietnam, most committed no atrocities. Many never saw combat. Roughly 200,000 were the serious, hardcore, gung-ho war criminals. But we never dealt with the issue. We simply wondered why good old Steve, Germaine, or Ted screamed in their sleep. We did not so much invade Vietnam as insinuate ourselves, becoming a greater presence until LBJ was able to concoct the Tonkin Gulf incident. But we were instrumental in 28 changes of government between 1955 and 1965, each practically hand-picked. We finally found our perfect leaders in the abysmally corrupt administrations of President Tu and General Ki. We started things in Iraq a bit differently. We invaded outright. We selected a representative government that no one liked, and we're trying to concoct one that anyone will like now. And while the parallels to Vietnam are not facetious, the real danger is that we may be following Israel's path, making the same awful mistakes that Sharon's hideous Likud government is making, including the humiliation and abuse of prisoners. In the process, we're creating an atmosphere of hate, fear, and mistrust that will linger until George Bush and his greedy ideological crusade are but dim memories. Torture and prisoner abuse are bred on boredom and resentment and a touch of fear. Each stems from a simple truth that all armies have known. Army life, no matter how high and noble the cause may sound, is moments of intense terror separated by vast expanses of bleak monotony. It seems apparent that intelligence people and private contractors, read mercenaries, told the army reservists in question to extract information from the people in their custody, regardless of the fact that many of these people had been incarcerated simply for driving while Iraqi. The soldiers went way too far, encouraged by people they believed to be superiors. They may even have killed and hidden the evidence. This commentator wishes that an official investigation would allay all fears and resolve all questions. It will not. Military investigations always have more than one motivation, and truth is rarely the prime mover. And unless we are honest and face the truth, we can hardly expect the Iraqi people to develop much respect or regard for us, which also means a transparent process. While Secretary Rumsfeld must take ultimate responsibility for the actions of his department, removing Rumsfeld at this time is a bad move. Two things. With this administration's track record, we have no assurance that George wouldn't attempt to elevate someone even worse. Dick Armitage? Jim Woolsey? Two, by removing him now, he will be a barely recalled blotch on the vast stain of history in the fall, whereas if he's impeached, it would not get underway until August and September and would look much worse for the administration around election time. Cynical? Any more cynical than President 43 claiming to be overjoyed to talk to the 9/11 Commission after fighting it tooth and nail for months? If America is to emerge from this current nightmare of post-surrealist imperialism with any of our skin intact, it is imperative that this Bush presidency fade quickly away. We cannot remake the world into whatever perverse image our current president fantasizes, for while it might provide temp work for borderline psychotics, it makes the world a much harsher and vastly more dangerous place. I am Uncle Bob Young for The Average Network, and that's an average opinion. Uncle Bob has been a radio producer for much of the last 35 years. Why? Hell, I don't know. Peace, kids.